Welcome to Techonomics, where we look at technology in society and the state of the economy. This week, dog selfies. Host Jason Middleton also has the science of negotiation and how to get more of what you want. Up first, though, is there a jump in the technology of hydrogen fuel cells for cars? Techonomics on KGO A10 starts now.
Welcome to this week's edition of Techonomics. I'm your happy host, Jason Middleton. We're starting this week with some tech that could, well, it could save the planet. Well, it might help reverse global warming at the very least, if there's a market for it. I'm talking about hydrogen fuel cell technology. Now, that's been around a while, but there's a recent advancement that may push fuel cells more into the mainstream. And that advance is range. New tech will increase the range from 200 miles to 300 miles. So for anyone with range anxiety, that's good news. The challenge for the technology is charging stations. And luckily, consumers are increasing the demand for these cars, and car makers are getting more serious about making fuel cell vehicles. Here's the talk I had with a fuel cell expert and researcher.
My name is Tim Lipman, and I'm co-director of the Transportation Sustainability Research Center at UC Berkeley.
Full disclosure, I live near you in the Oakland Hills, and you used to have a little Mercedes that was running around town, making me feel guilty about the Jeep that I run around town in. And I noticed that you have a new car that you're driving around. So let's compare the technologies. What was in the Mercedes that you used to have, and what are you driving now?
Well, they're both using the same basic technology, which is hydrogen fuel cell technology, coupled with a battery and an electric motor. So both of these vehicles are similar to the battery electric vehicles you see driving around, the Nissan Leafs and BMW i3s and Teslas. But instead of charging and discharging a battery by plugging it in, most of the electricity comes from a hydrogen fuel cell that converts hydrogen and oxygen from the air into electricity and produces electricity to drive the motor, and only water comes out of the tailpipe.
That's amazing.
So the technology is very cool, and it's been coming along a long ways. The difference between the two cars is that the older Mercedes B-Class, of which there were just a handful made as prototypes, could only go about 200 miles on a tank of hydrogen. And because they were prototypes, they were never fully crash tested or fully commercialized. And so we were testing those for a number of years and some earlier prototypes as well. We've tested over 15 different fuel cell vehicles at UC Berkeley over the last 10 years. And we've seen the technology steadily increase to the point where we now have this new Mirai vehicle that has a 300-mile driving range on the highway and maybe 260 or so around town. And it's been fully crash tested, safety certified. It has airbags, collision avoidance systems. So it's by far the most technologically advanced fuel cell car ever made.
Wow. And adding 100 miles to the range, that's huge, because I think range fear is one of the things that keeps consumers away from electrical cars. Is that what you've heard too?
Yes, especially with the electric cars we have today, where the cars that offer more than 100 miles range, like the Tesla Model S, are quite expensive. Now, we do have a new generation of plug-in cars coming with the Chevy Bolt, that's with a B, mm-hmm. Chevy Bolt, that will have a purported 200-mile range on batteries. Mm. And then there's, of course, the highly vaunted Tesla Model 3 that'll be out in a few years now, so don't hold your breath on that. But it'll be out pretty soon, and then that will also offer a potential 200-mile range. So that's a lot better, but as someone who drove the 200-mile Mercedes for a long time, the difference between 200 and 300, just in terms of how often you have to think about refueling it, being able to get to Sacramento and back without really worrying about, you know, how fast you're driving if you're in a hurry, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. Now, let's talk about getting that hydrogen into the car, because I can't just run down to Lucky and get myself a canister of hydrogen or anything like that. So is there a scale challenge for these fuel cell cars?
Yeah, that is now the big challenge. So for many years, the focus was on making the cars work, because if you can't get the cars to be good and commercializable, then the hydrogen does, the infrastructure doesn't really matter. Now that the vehicles have come along so far, the big push now is for building the hydrogen fueling network. And there's a whole bunch of different ideas for this, including ideas for potential home refueling, where you might be able to fill up with hydrogen at home slowly overnight. That hasn't really worked out yet. So for now, the concept is central stations co-located with gasoline stations. So there'll simply be a hydrogen pump kind of off to the side of a gas station, and you'll pull in there and fuel very much like you fill a gas car now. It takes about 5 minutes, swipe a credit card, you know, pay for it, off you go. However, the stations are somewhat complicated and expensive to build at this point. And so we only have about 20 hydrogen stations in California right now, about 7 or 8 in the Bay Area. But there are several more being built right now, and later this month, the state will be awarding, or at least accepting proposals, and then later awarding money for about 15 more stations. So they're working to build a network of first 50 and then moving towards 100 stations in California. And we're leading the country on this, mm-hmm. you know, by a long ways.
Right, I'm sure.
But it really has to be kind of clusters. So it's really L.A., the Bay Area, and Sacramento first, mm-hmm. and then there will be more stations built. But there is a station, I should point out, in Coalinga, halfway up I-5. So with the 300-mile cars, we can actually now drive between L.A. and the Bay Area.
Oh, that's key, actually. You know, you mentioned the network, of course, and Elon Musk over at Tesla had to build his own network. And then you mentioned the state was helping with the hydrogen network. And I'm wondering, what policy are you seeing? Are you seeing any challenges there when it comes to politics and in either in helping or hindering this effort?
Yeah, well, I think the state is really to be commended, because without the state stepping in and co-funding the stations with industry, they're not paying for all of it, but they are paying for a significant amount of this initial capital, the whole vehicle proposition wouldn't really work, because the automakers are actually supporting the infrastructure as well, but you can't expect the automakers to build and own and operate these stations. It's just not what they do. And until we get more cars on the road, these stations really aren't going to make money. You know, they're not even going to break even initially until we get more volume. So we really do need to subsidize it. And the legislature in California, the policy has been very important there, as is the policy now to, you know, put out electric vehicle charging infrastructure, which we're going to start seeing a lot more of as well. And we really feel like we need both of these options. It's not, oh, the plug-in electrics are going to fade away because the fuel cells are coming on, or, you know, we don't need the fuel cells because the plug-in electrics are doing well. They have different niches that they occupy, and they're all needed. We need as many zero-emission vehicles on the road as possible, as soon as possible, and we need both technologies.
We're speaking with Tim Lipman. He runs a fuel cell research team over at UC Berkeley. So what does the roadmap look like? Give me some timelines as to when availability, in your opinion, as we move forward, realistically, because I think there might be some challenges coming up, but you also might see some quick adoption. I mean, Elon Musk is doing okay at Tesla.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Tesla has been an amazing story, and it shows what a really committed company that builds a really good product can do and really push this zero-emission vehicle proposition forward. We're very excited about that. We're very excited about all the new electric cars coming on the market from electric, you know, Volkswagens, Fords, Chevys. They're just all coming on really strong right now. So what I see is it's really the time the plug-in electrics are coming into their heyday. We have about 200,000, moving towards 250,000 plug-ins in California, and I see that the goal is 1 million here by 2020. I don't think we're going to quite get there, but I think there will be several hundred thousand plug-ins by 2020, and then that's when the fuel cell vehicles will really start to come in too, because the infrastructure network will be developed enough, and we expect then fuel cell cars to be on the market. The two commercial ones now are the Toyota Mirai that we've been talking about, uh-huh. and the Hyundai, the Korean company, the Hyundai Tucson, which is a small SUV fuel cell vehicle that we're also testing at UC Berkeley. It's a very nice car. You can only lease that now. You can't purchase it, whereas the Toyota can be bought if you want to. But then next year, Honda brings out its car, the Clarity, which might have a 400-mile range, we're hearing. Mm. And then by 2018 to 2020, there will be fuel cell vehicles by Mercedes, probably Volkswagen, and almost certainly BMW as well. Okay. And probably Ford as well by then, and probably Nissan. So there are going to be 7 or 8 different fuel cell vehicles to choose from by, say, 2018, 2019.
Wow. That's a lot quicker than I thought you were going to tell me, which is great news. You mentioned a lot of car makers are jumping on board for this technology. I'm wondering, anything with the fossil fuel industry, like Chevron, ExxonMobil, those kind of companies, because you mentioned earlier that maybe the network could kind of be plugged into, if you will, the existing gas stations.
Wow, well, that's a very perceptive question. So this has been a big issue ever since hydrogen cars were first introduced about 10 years ago. At that point, the big oil companies were very interested because they did see it as a potential threat to their business. They also see it as an extension of their business because oil refineries actually use lots of hydrogen to process gasoline, and that amount is actually going up. So the oil industry manufactures huge amounts of hydrogen. They understand it. They know how to deal with it. But then when it became clear about 10 years ago that the fuel cell car technology wasn't quite where it needed to be for the automakers to introduce it, the oil companies all backed off for a while and just were in kind of a wait-and-see mode. Mm-hmm. Now that this new wave is coming, however, one oil company in particular is clearly starting to get back into the game of proposing and building hydrogen stations. And we, you know, it's too early to tell because, again, these proposals will be awarded this fall. They go in a month. Mm. But I would be kind of surprised if one of the big oil companies wasn't among the groups that will be building the next round of stations. That's a kind of a telling thing right there.
Yeah, and given the accelerated time frame we just talked about as well. So I hope somebody jumps on board. Give me the biggest headwind and give me the biggest tailwind for this industry sector from your perspective as a fuel cell researcher.
Yeah, I would say the biggest headwind is what we sort of started talking about, which is the infrastructure, the getting enough stations out there so that people will find it convenient to stop by one on their way home. Now, there's a lot of technology that helps with that. There's smartphones that can direct you to the stations, you know, that are out there. But it's really the complexity of not only building but operating those stations. They do require a significant amount of maintenance because of the hydrogen compressor that's needed to compress the hydrogen up to the pressures we need to dispense it to the vehicle. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a complicated infrastructure, and it's expensive, and it'll take a while before it starts making money. So it's kind of a loss leader that someone has to absorb. That's really the big thing. That's really the only big thing at this point in my mind. The tailwind, in my mind, is based on, again, the 10 years of research we've done at UC Berkeley, where we've been putting people in these cars, just regular people, and letting them drive them for anywhere from 15 minutes to a month, and we survey them before and after they drive, and we get a sense of how do they like the car, when they do the refueling, do they feel safe with it, what do they think of the whole experience, does it exceed their expectations? Almost overwhelmingly, people are, you know, impressed with these cars, and they exceed their expectations. They get comfortable with the refueling very quickly, which we weren't sure we would see. And so the tailwind is the consumer adoption, where these cars are not just green cars, but they're fun to drive, and people feel like they're driving the future.
Well, that's great news, because obviously if there's a market opportunity, somebody's going to step in there, realize it. So I think that this technology, it will be adopted if we want it, and apparently we do.
Yeah, and Toyota likes to point out that they did lose money when they first started selling the Prius. They didn't admit it at the time, but they do now.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them 9 years to sell 1 million hybrids globally.
Mm-hmm.
In the next 7 years, they're now, now that it's been 16 years, they're now up to 9 million hybrids. So they've definitely made a lot of money at this point. But it took a while, and that's what they're saying they want to do with the Mirai.
Tim, thanks a lot for your time this morning and your perspective, and keep up the good work.
Hey, thank you, Jason. It's been great talking with you.
That's Tim Lippman over at UC Berkeley. He's a fuel cell researcher. One thing that stood out for me there was the idea of how new markets need loss leaders. Now, Mr. Lippman mentioned Toyota being proud of having the Prius as a product that lost them money for years. And now Tesla is doing the same sort of thing with its cars. That company loses money every year so far, but it's still advancing the alt-fuel sector. Coming up after this short break, we move away from the art of the deal, if you will. We're going to look at the science of negotiating. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Please come back.